Today on Rocket Pop, we are reviewing The Remains of the Day.
Oh, people have been waiting for this review.
Marvel presents Remains of the Day. No. This is a quiet, understated, slow burn of a movie that's all about a British butler in a big manor back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. But this movie is rich with moral lessons and a little bit of romance. There's great stuff for you and your family if you're willing to take things slow, pause along the way, and discuss.
Rocket Pop is go.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in
orbit. Roger, 0G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
Jeff, I just watched a movie for the first time on Amazon Video, and I want to talk about it.
You've never seen a movie before?
And I think maybe it's new to you as well, so it's going to be exciting. It's Remains of the Day. And when I think of a wonderful Christian family sitting down together to watch a movie, Remains of the Day is right up top. It's a kind of a new flashy thing. I think it came out, is it Disney? Last year?
Marvel.
What's the history of this film?
You're way off, my friend.
Oh.
This is a 1993 movie based off of a novel that had come out 4 years before. It's a Merchant Ivory film, which back in the 80s and 90s was code for very classy film. Merchant and Ivory were the producing and directing guys who made these very prestige movies. And this was one of those prestige movies.
I think maybe this is the first Merchant Ivory movie I've ever seen, perhaps, because in my world of Die Hard and whatever I was watching in the 80s, RoboCop, when I was allowed to see it, Merchant Ivory meant precious and self-important in my world. Now, yes. Maybe that was based on nothing. Maybe they're wonderful films. But I was interested when I saw those names come up on the screen. I was thinking, I'd love to ask Jeff what a Merchant Ivory film is. Are they good movies, or are they just pretty movies?
I think they're known to be good movies. So
okay.
I personally like a lot of them.
Oh.
They are usually based
name
off
two more of them.
Mr. and Mrs. Bridge. Their most famous one is A Room with a View, Howard's End. These were all prestige movies that when you watch, you know, they were always nominated for Oscars, winning big Oscars, especially for the actors. When you watch them, it felt like you were reading a book, a novel from high school that you knew was important. And if you can get into it and you can kind of let your brain go, you're like, what? I kind of surprised myself. I really like that. And if you don't, just like in high school, if you're like, I'm not going to enjoy this. Yeah, you'll have a rough time. That said, I think of all the Merchant Ivory movies, I think I use this phrase a lot. This is the most accessible.
Okay. That's great. I've never seen any of those movies. And in my mind, Remains of the Day and Howard's End went in the same box. And I don't know why.
Because they both star Anthony Hopkins
with hair.
And if I remember correctly, I may be wrong. Emma Thompson might be, I think she's in Howard's End as well.
Okay. So they started doing like a Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
There was several surprises for me in this film. One was that Anthony Hopkins looks like a young to middle-aged man. I don't know that I've ever seen that before or don't remember seeing it. And Emma Thompson, watch out for this one. I found her likable. So that was a shocker for me as well.
Yeah, it's funny because I actually recently watched a very old movie that had Anthony Hopkins in it when he was a young man. Apparently he was never a young man. He was always always middle-aged or kind of old.
That's right. Okay, so I know you have touched on this a little bit in the intro, but what is it that makes this movie notable? You famously really like this movie. you're the only reason that I saw it, because I know you were like devoted to the book. Mm-hmm. So just talk us through, why would someone watch this at all?
So this sounds real nerdy. I read the book that this is based on about once a year. I think it's my favorite novel. It's by a guy named Kazuo Ishiguro, who is a Japanese author, but he's actually British. He grew up in Britain, so he has a British accent. I love his novels. I love this novel that it's based off of. I love this movie. It's about, I'll give you a flyover. It's about Stevens, played by Anthony Hopkins, who is a butler in this manor, Darlington Hall, this beautiful manor in England throughout the 1930s and into the 1940s.
Yeah, what it is Downton Abbey without the fun and hijinks, right?
There are no hijinks.
Okay.
There are lowjinks, just no hijinks.
Yeah.
It's all, and so.
But it's that exact era, right? Yes. It's that exact era.
Upstairs, downstairs kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the crux of the movie, though, is it's about the butler, Stevens, and the house.
Good name. Solid house, name.
Housekeeper, Miss Kenton, played by Emma Thompson. Thank you. And their relationship. But maybe the most interesting thing is that Stevens, who is the quintessential butler. He is, you know, the butler of all butlers. I read a thing that Anthony Hopkins, when he was preparing to play this role, he talked to some butlers from big manors, and someone had said to him, a really good butler, when they're in the room with someone else, makes it feel emptier than if they were not there.
Yeah, he certainly put that across.
And so the tension of the movie, though, is he's so blindly devoted to Lord Darlington, who's actually a nice, likable character. The problem is Darlington, throughout the movie, we're realizing he is a Nazi appeaser. Maybe not quite a Nazi sympathizer, but he wants appeasement. And things that happen in the house are all these diplomatic meetings that we know on the other side of history were bad. Like, this was all bad. This was, yes. they were allowing things to happen they should not have. And the tension is, will Stevens ever say something or go, I don't think this is a good place for me? Instead, his is a very formal, blind devotion to his leader.
Oh, I hear a theme coming on.
There's a total theme. And along with that is, so he's cut himself off from, I would even say, having a moral take on what's happening.
Yes, that's a great way of saying it. Let me, I'll give my entire review right now, and then you can go on. I was prepared to patiently wait through scenes where there's not much talking. I'm waiting for something to happen, and then this is going to happen, right?
Plot.
And then, like, somebody died in the movie, and I'm like, woo! Yeah, we got a plot point there. But what I was refreshed by and surprised by was, as you say, there's this other layer of kind of world events and how they touch down in this very private world. And there are many scenes where you are rooting for Stevens to, you're gonna feel something, right? You're gonna respond. And it's really interesting as an audience to what it makes you do when your protagonist doesn't bow up, doesn't respond, doesn't seize the moment. And it creates anxiety in you because you're going like, well, you have to take the bait on this. This is, you gotta do something here. As you know, I like patient movies. There's the famous, well, to me it's famous, Sam Rockwell movie where he's in space, not much happens, and he's dealing with inner conflict the whole time because he's so alone.
A slow burn kind of movie.
Yeah, yeah. I like those. I like those kind of, I like sitting in that moment. And I liked the space that we were in for this movie. And as you say, it's a pleasure to watch. I was refreshed by, it might be slow moving, but there's stuff happening here. And I really liked, I don't hope I don't step on your toes with this theme, but I really liked the idea of, by the end of the movie, somebody who hasn't done anything, I didn't have any respect for him. I was so disappointed in him not doing anything that I thought, you got to stand up for something, bro. And obviously, if I watched it alone because I didn't know what to expect, I would happily go back and watch this with my preteen and teenage daughters. And I would happily watch them and note, you know, I'm a famous for the pause, pause the movie and go, he should have said something there, right? That was wrong, what he heard. These are Nazis. And they all seem nice and very professional, but they're Nazis. This isn't good, is it? Oh, okay, let's watch on. And then they would, you know, come to the conclusion, man, there comes a point where you have to stand up for what's true. Anyways, I was pleasantly surprised by it. And by the end, you know, I had that feeling at the end, like, oh, shoot, we're done. There's no more going to happen here. So anyways, that was my experience with the movie. Tell us more about it.
I think his, I can't respond with any sort of moral moment. It rhymes with, he also can't respond to this affection that he clearly has for Emma Thompson. And the one problem in the movie is that she clearly has affection for him and we're not quite sure why. But right. there's a connection point there that you want him to feel and you want him to respond based off of what is within him. And right. it is a frustrating movie because he's not. Maybe the most pointed moment in the movie about the moral standing is Lord Darlington says to Stevens, we brought on these two young German housekeepers and they're Jewish. And that causes a lot of problems here. You're going to need to let them go. And Stevens goes to Mrs. Kenton to tell her, and she's, you know, she's the opposite of him. She feels and expresses her emotions. And she's right. like, are you kidding me? You can't do that. And he's like, what are you talking about? The master told us to. We're right, going to do right, this. Right, right. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And she goes, if you do this, I will leave. I will leave. I will leave. Well, I don't know what to say to that. I don't. And so it's this moral moment that both of them have to respond to. And to some degree, neither do as well as you would want them to. The title of the movie is a little
obscure.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it comes to light in the novel, and what it is it's a reference to the movie actually goes back and forth in a timeline. It starts in the 1950s after Darlington is no longer Lord of the Manor. He's gone with and who's
standing in his place. There were two delightful surprises in the movie, one of which is who's standing in his place.
Christopher Reeve.
Superman.
Yeah. And he's good.
He was great. I mean, does that guy not represent, forgive me, like the American ideal? Like, he's broad shouldered. He's well spoken. He's handsome. Just like, that guy should be in 50 movies. I don't know why he didn't do more movies when he was young. Anyhow,
gives a great speech at one point. It's a very tense moment where he's at a gathering of people and they're all kind of, they're all just nice about appeasement. And he stands up and goes, you are all of you, amateurs.
Yeah.
And you just hear the record scratch and he runs them all down. Like, this should be left to the professionals. He's so good in that.
And what's going to be my other delightful surprise?
I don't know.
A young Hugh Grant.
Oh,
Oh, you hated him.
No, I was on the plane yesterday rewatching this movie and I paused a couple of these moments laughing at how good he is in his little, Stevens is tasked with explaining the birds and bees to this guy because Darlington's too big of a wuss to tell his godson about this. So it's this, it's not tense. It's nothing you wouldn't want your kids to see.
No.
It's just very awkward. It's, you know, both of them just feel, and Hugh Grant's just so great in it.
Yes, he is. I mean, he was the master of his craft at age 24. I mean, so good. I'll just throw in here, because you brought it up, that there's nothing in this movie that you wouldn't want a 10-year-old to see. Is that right? I don't think I remember any swearing. There's
he says D-word when he drops a bottle of wine.
That's right.
The only time.
That's right. There's tension that you think maybe there's going to be something a little sexual or something. Nothing. Even this, go tell him the birds and the bees. And you realize this guy can't get up the gumption to actually speak frankly about the birds and the bees. There's nothing in the
He's never going to say the word sex. No, that's never coming out of his mouth.
Beyond the pale. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So going back to the title of the movie, it goes back to the book. And in both the book and the movie, there's this jockeying back and forth on the timeline. And it's in the 1950s, and Stevens goes on a little road trip, but he's remembering the old times. Well, towards the end of the movie, the idea is, what will he do with the remains of the day, with what's left with his life? And you're left going, I'm not sure he's going to make a change. It's not in the book, but there's this clear symbolism at the end of the movie with this animal that gets in the house that. It's very clear what the filmmakers are trying to say is going to play out for Stevens based off of these last final moments of the movie.
While we're there, we might have viewers who read. I mean, I don't know. Could you give us a recommendation for why do you read this book every year? What is it about this book? What's wrong with you? Another question would be, what's wrong with you?
I love the writing of it. It's written from Stevens' perspective. It's first person from him. Okay. And so to me, it's interesting because it's a different angle. I like when they do this with someone who's so aloof. I mean, he's so aloof.
He's telling on himself and doesn't know it.
That's exactly right. And so other people are saying things. There's a beautiful moment toward the end of the book where he's sitting out. The scene is different where he's sitting outside when the lights come on the little pier. And he's talking to someone and I think he says something, oh, thank you for the handkerchief. Yeah, I don't know what gets away from me. Clearly he's saying he's crying without saying he's crying.
Right.
I wouldn't tell anyone to read this book over and over again.
Oh, okay.
I find it beautiful. I think it's really touching.
Okay.
So it comes back to the reason I like the movie and the book, and maybe there's something here to dive into, but there's this really interesting theme of blind devotion. And gosh, I was rewatching this again on the flight yesterday and just thinking it was heartbreaking to watch. Mrs. Kenton says at the end, she says, I'm just afraid I've wasted my life. And she's saying that, well, how much more should Stevens be feeling this?
Yeah, she actually went and had a family and everything. She had children, and she's saying, maybe I wasted my life. And here's a guy who didn't do anything with his life except for live in this one house and make sure that the toast came out on time.
And his father works for him, and that is all so very, very tense. All I kept thinking, not to overread into this, but all I kept thinking was, I would want to show this to anybody who is embarking on a career and say, please be careful. Please be careful, because the Lord of the Manor is going to want to take everything from you.
Wow, that's a great point.
And you will be faced with moral situations, and you will go, who am I to say something about what this company has decided? This is not my place. My job is to crunch the numbers. Why would I stand up for anything? Wow. You will get to the end of your life and go, I never stood up for something.
Wow.
I think of my nephew who's about to enter the workforce after he graduates.
Right.
I would want to show him this movie and talk him through this and go, look, it's fine to work. Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
But this God's goal for you is not blind devotion to some organization. It ate his soul. Ate Stephen's soul.
That's right. I just had a conversation yesterday with a young man who's in the middle of a young career, and he's talking to me about this big corporation that he works for. And he said to me, it has dawned on me that if I'll give it to them, they'll take my whole life. And that's, they sit there waiting. And I have to proactively be the one that says, this far, no further. And you have to walk in the door with those lines drawn. I really appreciate what you said about it's a sober look at a person who has said no to family life and go, let's just look at his life for a second. Let's just look at what kind of satisfaction is there for his life. And what you find is his satisfaction, his kind of joy comes from the 1 hour in the evening when he's alone to read a book. That's the best part of his life. Not the joy of children, certainly not grandchildren, not the warmth of the family on Thanksgiving Day. None of that. He's jettisoned all of it. What I appreciate is that we're filled with movies today that tell us you don't need any family. Mm-hmm. It's a good time out there. This movie says, well, let's look at someone without a family. How much of a good time is it? There's nothing. So I really like that. It's a pretty rare look at it's a rare, again, sober-minded look at the family-less.
His only family member is his father, who again works for him. And his father gets sick, and Stephen's response is, I have to put my relationship with my father in the context of my duty. Now, yes. I think both you and I would say there's something noble about duty and about us being committed to something dutifully. Sure. But boy, it's hard because I don't know if it was a different movie and the Lord was good. The Lord Darlington was a good moral person. We'd watch this movie and go, oh, that's how we're meant to be to the Lord.
Of course. Yeah, I could see that.
And we would go, oh, well, but he's not. And again, what I love is they don't make Lord Darlington this. he's such a sweet man, and you really feel likeable for him. And you know what's weird? I'd never thought of this before. And I don't know if this was a way to do things easily or not. But he doesn't have a family. He doesn't have a wife.
That's right.
He doesn't have children. It's very, very odd.
Yeah.
There are some light moments in the movie that make it a little refreshing. There are some sweet moments. There are moments of hope. There are kind of funny moments. I quote this all the time. There's a moment. I just love their relationship, Stephen's and Kenton's relationship, because she's a beautiful woman. She's just like, she's beauty. She just likes beautiful things. She brings flowers to him, which he's like, I can't have flowers in my office. And she likes to needle him and like kind of make fun of him a little. And he, at one point, she's needling him about, you don't like having pretty girls who work here because it's a distraction to you, is it? Oh, Mr. Stevens, they're outside walking. And I love this line. And he's just walking along, looking out as she's da 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 da. And he says to her, he says, do you know what I'm doing, Miss Kenton? I'm placing my thoughts elsewhere while you chatter away. I wish I could use that line once a day. You talk a lot about, you do the pause. And I think it's worth sitting on that. Like, if you're going to watch this movie with your family, so let's talk about who that is. Are girls going to be more interested in this than boys? Yes, probably, because it's a highly relational movie. Right. Although, I think if you had a 14-year-old son, I bet you, and you sat him down and go, look, there's no guns. Yeah, there's no guns. There's no robot. Yeah, there's no robots. but I want to talk with you about some things as we go. You will have to pause along the way and point out the moment when, he should have said something about firing these Jews. Pause. Now, what do you think he should be doing when his father is on his deathbed? What do you think he should be doing? I'm a movie purist, so usually I like watch the movie from front to end, but I think hand-holding along the way is a really great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of how you'd handle it with a boy, and you might do something like, right before you fire it up, you say, we're going to look at the profile of a man. Let's start asking ourselves from the beginning, what's wrong with this guy?
Ooh, that's press great. Play. That's great.
And the kid would be all over it.
That's a good in, because even right from the beginning, it starts off kind of pretty and there's some mystery going on. Like, okay, this house seems to be falling on hard times. What's going on here? And then when we meet Stevens, you're trying to put it together. Boy, there's other little moral moments. Did you not feel the tension? Like, oh, it's so nerve wracking. It's back in the 1950s. Stevens is on this little road trip. He runs out of gas, stops in this pub, and it's kind of this lively English pub. And he finds himself accidentally puffing up his own role on the world stage. Instead of saying, I was a butler at Darlington Hall, people just start making it, oh, you must be a gentleman. And did you know Mr. Churchill? Well, he came to the house.
I met him.
he finds himself overstating his importance. And then this doctor comes in, and somehow, I'm not really sure how, the doctor kind of sees through it. He's gracious about it.
Right.
But he sees, and there's just this tension there of, and by the way, did you catch the moment when they lead him upstairs to his room? The guy who runs the pub and the hotel or whatever, he points to a picture of his son. He says, "That's my son. He's died at Dunkirk." And knowing what you know in the movie, it's almost like Stephen should feel a bit of guilt.
Yeah.
That something absolutely happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such an interesting moment. He's looking at the mementos of this son's heroic life. And it's such a contrast. This guy went out in a blaze of glory as a hero, and you soldier on as a microscopic nothing.
Yes.
And he just sat there staring at him. And you just, again, it's one of those moments where you're like, feel this guy, make this, let this wake you up. No.
Let this wake you up. Isn't that, that's a great way to describe it. He's kind of sleepwalking.
You're right.
He's sleepwalking. Now, all that said, just the set dressing of, and if you've seen Downton Abbey, you've seen this, but just the set dressing of what's it like to run a big house when, you know, 100 people of very high importance come in and they've got all the pheasants and they've got this and just such beautiful little moments all along the way.
A little pageantry.
Yes, quite a lot. So it's the kind of movie that is slow, deliberate. It is a slow burn, but it's worth watching with a family and talking through some of these things and asking some of these questions. What should happen? What shouldn't happen? I'll warn you, it is a tragedy. Tragedy in terms of you're not going to end going, oh, all right.
They got him.
No, it's not. And it's a warning film.
Right.
It's a shot across the bow. And that's why I like movies like this sometimes, is it says, it says, hey, watch this so you don't make these mistakes.
Right. Yeah, it is a period drama, slow moving, but we think that it's nutritious and it would be great to see with your spouse or with your family and talk through some of the themes. We give it 2 tasseled rope gongs. Way up.
Way up.
3, 2, 1, 0. Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.